Hey everyone, thanks for joining us on this edition of the Skyhook Podcast. Just want to give you a quick note at the top. Chris Miles and I recorded this pod last Tuesday before the Gabby Williams contract extension was announced. So when you hear us talk about that subject, it is happening without that new information present. So we apologize for that, but you know how the grind goes. We're just trying to put up as much content as possible, but sometimes the day job gets in the way of that. So we're just putting it up now. But yeah, let's get into the conversation right now. Welcome to another edition of the Skyhook Podcast. My name is James Kay, and with me coming off his most recent podcast at What's Good Radio is my man, Chris Pennant. Chris, a lot of audio for you tonight. How you doing?
I'm good. I got my big roller derby cup of water right here. I just picked up some spearmint chapstick at Walgreens the other day. Underrated. Check it out. Pick it up. It's very nice. And I'm ready. It was a very refreshing conversation. Shout out Billy, the angry Knicks fan. Even though we're talking about WNBA here, he had a lot of MNBA thoughts that were very, very refreshing and fun. So I'm energized. I'm ready to go.
Hey, definitely check out What's Good Radio. Great podcast. You can find it on Spotify. But right now we have an exciting lineup to go through today, and we couldn't do it without one of the most active people in the WNBA landscape, Miles Elrich. Welcome to the show, man. How are you holding up right now?
I'm good. Happy to talk Sky, happy to talk Liberty, happy to talk anything WNBA anytime.
Well, we're going to get into it all, but before we do that, can you just tell everyone where they can find your work? Because it's just excellent.
Oh, sure. Great. I'm a WNBA writer for Winsider, Queen Ballers Club, and Nets Republic. At Nets Republic, I cover the Liberty beat, and I'm at Miles Ehrlich on Twitter, and at MilesEhrlich.com, I've got all my work together.
Definitely follow Miles. He is just all over the beat. Seriously, just a great follow and someone that really contributes to the growth of the game. So let's get into it, guys. I mean, Chris and I did a mini podcast on this yesterday, but we wanted to discuss it as a group since we didn't get a chance to the other day. After a little bit of a complicated process to get to this point, Gabby Williams has been traded to the LA Sparks for Stephanie Watts, who was the 10th overall pick in the 2021 WNBA draft. And this guy also got the rights to Leilani Fibich. I'm probably messing that up, but we're going to push through it anyway. Miles, the audience kind of knows where Chris and I stand on this since, again, we recorded the episode yesterday giving our 10-minute takes, but we want to kind of hear from you first. What was your reaction when you saw all of this unfold over that hectic last week?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of nuance to be found here, and I think that's what was missing over the last couple of days. And like, I know that's not splashy to say, it's not a sizzling take, but a lot of stuff can be true. Like, Gabby could have wanted a larger role and wanted out, and she also could have been upset to leave at the same time. Coach Wade believes that 100% that he was doing right by his team, by the players that were showing up to camp. And without the context that we got yesterday, the full season suspension felt really harsh because that's where it felt like it turned personal on social media. But like when Gabby's letting tweets fly and way to say no comment, public opinion is always going to sway in favor of the player. But then we hear that she demanded a trade back in April and the team was trying to acquiesce her. The timing of all of it is just so interesting because like, do teams want to absorb a super talented, versatile player like Gabby Williams, whose skill set is still improving, like her game's still climbing. She's coming off a great overseas season, of course. But like, this is a league of 144, which could end up being more like 136 this season, because there are so many cap tight teams rolling with a short bench. So how many players a couple of weeks ago were willing to play another roster spot down for 2/3 of the season before Gabby could potentially return? So like, part of it might have been Wade holding for a while until Gabby was suspended and then he could pull off the deal. So there are lots of layers to this. It's not just as simple as being portrayed as it has all been portrayed as, and like, will Stephanie Watts make the roster? We'll see. But this was just such a losing position for James Wade because fans create the binary where you're either pro player or pro management. Mm-hmm. And especially when you've got a player that's as beloved as Gabby Williams.
If I can jump in for a second, James, because that's an interesting position. And I think it is a very tough one to find an equilibrium on. I have been kind of wondering, sometimes publicly, but mostly privately, about James Wade's general management capability. And not to say he's incapable, but just with the Katie Lou Samuelson draft pick, and as James and I talked about, a lot of these star players on the Sky are Amber Stocks picks from the previous coaching regime. So I think it's interesting to say that, especially at this moment in time, with such a highly scrutinized trade. And I'm not disagreeing with you. I just think it's an interesting position, not one that I'd really considered.
So the part that I can't really get past is, one, the timing of all this. I think at the most, the Sky would have had 2 weeks before the WNBA draft to try to figure something else out with Gabby, who I know the minutes don't really line up, and maybe that the Sky's value her more than her minutes output would suggest. But I think that when we look at this situation, I don't think that we can pretend that every other general manager wouldn't have suspended her contract had they been put in the position that James Wade was in. And again, the timing, when you only have 2 weeks to put together a trade for, again, someone that they really value. And I think about this upcoming season where Shyla Heal has had a hard time getting over from overseas. They might have actually needed point Gabby. And if she was there at camp and she was able to commit to some part of the season, I think that she would have actually had a little bit more minutes at the one, even if that wasn't something that she was going to get in the playoffs necessarily. But Miles, did you have a response to what Chris said?
Well, you guys will know the contract situation better than I will. But I was trying before the pod to break down how the Sky are going to make all of this work. And yeah. I think that some of it might've come down to just that, but I think it's a really great point when we're looking at draft success. And I was thinking back to James and I participated in a mock draft for Winsider where James mocked Kaiser Gondrzik for Chicago, and everybody was like, no, that's way too early. She's not going to go at 8. And then she ended up going at 4. but a lot of that conversation there was just around finding a backup point guard. And when the pick was Shyla Heal, who obviously there's so much stuff with the visa and just with COVID that it's tough to anticipate, but there were, Dana Evans was on the board. There were more pro ready players, and for a team that should be win now, that was a surprising pick to me. And like you've said, with their history of a couple of these number 4 overall picks not quite panning out to where they might expect number 4 overall picks to be, it's a really interesting thing that I hadn't considered and to kind of think about long term looking at this team.
That's really interesting. I actually don't think that we can give James Wade too much heat in year one for being a general manager. I mean, it's hard to be a head coach in any professional sports league, but there are very few examples out there where you can see a head coach be very successful while also being the general manager. I know it's more common in the WNBA, but it's still a hard role to navigate in year one. He was able to turn Katie Lou Samuelson into Azaree Stevens. And I think that we saw a lot of points last season where she is going to be a valuable piece for this team moving forward. And a lineup of Courtney Vandersloot, Ellie Quigley, Diamond DeShields, Azaree Stevens, and Candace Parker, I think, can compete with anyone in the league right now. And I think that has to count for something as well. And also, Ruthie Huber was one of the most efficient players in the WNBA last year too. So he got her at number 7. I think that he's probably still learning how to manage these two responsibilities as head coach and managing your players' personalities and the roster and making sure everybody's content. And also being the general manager when you have to make these tough moves where, again, like with the Gabby situation, you have to look at that and that's a tough decision you have to make and do what's best for your team, even if it's going to limit Gabby this upcoming season. And let's be honest, cost her $70,000. We can't forget about that. So I can't be too hard on James Wade right now. I actually think the Shyla Heal pick, if you look at the players that were drafted after Shai LaHeel. I don't really know how many other ones would be ready on day one either necessarily. I actually think Shai LaHeel is more ready for the league than other people might believe. Like someone who's played professional basketball since she was 14 years old has a parent that has also gone through the ringer and understands what it means to be a professional and can also mentor someone like Shai LaHeel. I do think I'm a little bit higher on her, but I can't knock you guys either. 19-year-old 5'6" guard is going to be running the second unit and hasn't had one day in training camp. You have to be a little bit concerned about that, but Chris, what do you have to add about this situation as well? Because like, we haven't had a chance to talk about it.
I think it's the COVID and just the passport situation is complicating. I think in a normal year, that's the thing that I keep coming back to. In a normal cycle of events between last year and this year, I don't know if everything goes down the way it did because the Olympics go off last year. There's no issue with passports from anywhere, really. And so these roster decisions that might have come up or might have been more cordial became a bit more touch and go, more frantic. Because decisions had to be made now. You're going to lose a large chunk of your roster for a good portion of the season, both from the EuroLeague season ending late and having the Olympic training camp and the Olympics themselves. So that's what I always just keep coming back to, that COVID-19, the pandemic, and how that just has affected not only last year's season, but this year's season. And conceivably could go on to affect the longer-term future depending on how players work out in their various destinations.
Definitely. I think that's an important point to make. But guys, the team is past this situation now. We can kind of focus on the season that starts in, oh my God, 4 days. 4 days until the start of the season. I mean, actually 3 days if you consider the W at large. So we're going to go over the Sky and the Liberty's 2021 outlook. But Miles, we got to hear your outside looking in perspective on the Sky before we do a deep dive into the New York Liberty. I'm going to put you on the spot just because I'm curious about where you would rank this team amongst the W's elite. I'm not saying you necessarily have to put a number on it, but if you had to ballpark it, where do you see this team right now as they head into the 2021 WNBA season?
I've got them top three for sure. I think that where they really needed to improve last season to this season was, and we're going to talk about this more with the Liberty too, but it was on the defensive end. They were last among all playoff teams with a defensive rating of 102.7 last year. They were eighth place. The Liberty were ninth. So like both of those teams really, really needed to improve. And for the Sky, they needed to do that inside. And I wrote an article for Winsider back when Candace Parker signed with Chicago, and found that she was really, really strong at defending the post. She gave up less than half a point per possession, which was sixth in the WNBA, the 92nd percentile. Wow. The other players that were defending the post, courtesy of Synergy last season, Steph Dolson was 28th, Cheyenne Parker was 25th, and Azaree Stevens was 26th. So Candace Parker coming in there really is a huge boon to just helping these guards, even if somebody, you know, loses their person on the perimeter and gets inside, or just stopping the post-ups. It's just, obviously she's coming off the defensive player of the year, but that was also somewhat system fit. But she's still a huge, huge upgrade. And there's just depth everywhere on this team. We were just talking about, I have no idea who even makes this roster because they just have so much depth. Like you've got Sloot, you've got Quigley, you've got Diamond, who as recently as a year ago was my dark horse MVP candidate. There are going to be nights where just the box scores are confusing because Allie Quigley will have only taken four shots, but that's not because she had a bad game. It was just because Candace was in the zone or Diamond went off for 25 where she, you know, got six layups in transition, or Steph Dolson hit five threes. Like weird things are going to happen. And like, it's because this team is so talented. And because they've got Courtney Vandersloot, who's who is the point guard, like the perfect point guard in this league. And then they've also got Candace Parker, who might be the best point forward in this league, who can start a break and just get out and run and throw those outlet passes. So this team, you can't be down on this team right now. And they're staying healthy while everyone else is unfortunately dealing with some injuries.
You said that they were a top three team. Who else would you put in that mix and being in the top three?
Yeah. So for me, even with the Angel McCautry injury, I've still got the Aces just because they are returning Liz Cambage and Kelsey Plum. And even though they lost Kayla McBride, bringing in Chelsea Gray, bringing in a point guard to help with that, help figure out some of that high low. But if you want to talk about depth, you never have a moment where either Asia Wilson or Liz Cambage is not on the floor. Not a lot of teams are going to have their second level interior players able to hang there. And just like that, just the rebounding and the defensive play at the, just every shot would be so difficult. Even though we're in a shooting league, I think if you can play bully ball by having the defending MVP and a player in Liz Cambage who, you know, owns the all-time WNBA scoring record, you're in really good shape. And that's adding to a team that already made the finals last season. And then my other one is the Minnesota Lynx. I know other people are all over the place on Minnesota.
I'm nodding right now.
I've seen like as low as sixth, but Kayla McBride is a huge addition. And I think that too many people are looking at her rough season last year and might not have read or might have forgotten about the piece that she penned for the Players Tribune, where she talked about just how mentally taxing the bubble was. And I think it's important for us to remember, like, that was a weird situation. And talking to some players now in training camp who talked about like having to get reacclimated to the world after the isolation and after not seeing their family for months and not seeing the country when it was really at its worst, dealing with all of that while also taking on all of the social justice initiatives that they were doing. Like, none of these players can be faulted for not performing at their best. And K-Mac this morning won the MVP overseas. She just finished her season with Fenerbahce and they swept the finals. So she's on her way back now. Ariel Powers was having an enormous season last year before she got hurt. So she's a big addition. Natalie Achanwa adds some more front court depth so that you don't have to run Sylvia Fowles into the ground in the regular season. You'll have her healthy and good to go in the postseason. Nafisa Collier is outstanding. She won the Rookie of the Year 2 years ago, and then Crystal Dangerfield won last year. So like their depth is also, I think that's what I keep coming back to in this season where so many teams like the Sky are going to have to deal with Steph Dolson and Astu Du leaving for a while for overseas commitments. Like most teams are going to have issues with their rosters. I think that the teams that are prepared with second line starters are the teams that are going to be in the top three at the end of the year.
I couldn't say it any better myself. I'm still mad that people had the Lynx sixth. I'm like, come on, man. Y'all can't go around singing Cheryl Reeves praises. Understand that she just stole a player in the draft, got a lot of the nice pieces that you just said, Achanwa, Kayla McBride, Ariel Powers. God, as just get up in your grill players go, I think Ariel Powers is tops in the league. And then people at some point are going to put the same respect on Damaris Dantas' capabilities as a outside shooting threat at her height that I am. And to have the Lynx any lower than fourth, I think is criminal.
Yeah, and I think that it says a lot about, like you said, they got a steal in the draft when they got Renia Davis at nine, and she unfortunately got hurt. But when it doesn't move the needle, that's really telling, right? When you can absorb a hit like that in preseason, which is really rough at any time, but if you can absorb that and just keep it moving because you know that you've got the reinforcements there, that you're a team that's in really good shape.
Yeah.
So I got to ask, just because I haven't followed up on it in a couple of days, Nafisa Collier is joining this team late, correct?
Yeah, I believe so. It feels like every team has at least one player that's really important that won't be there on time. So, I mean, I guess the Sky are in a lot better shape than many teams because they've got everybody cleared. But yeah, I think Fee is going to be late. I know when we transition to the Liberty, we could talk about those first couple of weeks and what they're going to have to deal with late arrivals, but it's happening a lot.
So I would agree with you. I think the Lynx do need to be ranked higher. And I actually do think the Renaya Davis, I mean, she's out indefinitely. I don't think that she's necessarily up for the season, but I think that she was actually going to have a really interesting rookie campaign where I think she was going to be able to expand her range more than what she was able to show off in college. But I'm with you guys. I just think that, I guess if we're going to look at the standings, like how we view them going into this season, the teams that I would just eliminate off the bat too would just be the Indiana Fever, the Dream, the Wings, the Sparks, the Liberty, the Mystics. And I'm going to reluctantly say that the Phoenix Mercury, who I still think are being a little overlooked right now, I would also say that they're not as good as the Sky, but every team has holes at the top, and I can't emphasize that enough. I actually don't think that losing Angel McCautry to that torn ACL is actually going to be the end of the world for the Aces, because people I feel like are just forgetting about Kelsey Plum. And I know that she's also coming off of an injury, but the way that her and Raquana Williams are going to be able to stretch the floor, I really like the Aces at the top. But Chris, I got to push back on you for a second too.
Okay.
How about the Storm? Because I know you were so high on them heading into this season. And the thing that I just can't get past the more that I look at this roster is how they're going to replace their defensive core of Natasha Howard, your Natasha Howard Miles, and Alicia Clark with Katie Lou Samuelson, who I believe is either just arriving back from overseas or will be back with the team soon. That to me is a huge question mark, just so we can keep this rolling. Can you make your, are you still high on the Storm? Or have your thoughts changed since we last talked about this 10, 14 days ago?
No, they really haven't. I think in this league, when you have 12 teams, the champs are legitimately the champs until you knock them off, or until there's a force majeure like what happened last year. The Mystics weren't going to win the title because Deladon and Tina Charles weren't there. So that was pretty much that. And as things come back to normal, I still think the Storm are, if not outright title contenders, they're contenders to make the WNBA Finals. You know, as good as Asia Wilson is, as good as Liz Cambage is, as good as Elena Deladon is, I don't know how you can watch Breonna Stewart play and say that she's not the best player in the world or 1A. I just don't. And that's, I don't want to knock anybody, because quick sidebar, I understand the focus on the league right now and the push, rightly so, to get players of all types, skin colors, hues, everything, more onto marketing and more in the publicity. That's well warranted and needed and deserved. But when it comes to talent, you should put Breonna Stewart on TV, because she is, as they would say in wrestling, that damn good.
Mm-hmm.
So even when you lose players the caliber of Howard and Clark, and I really think that the Clark loss, as good as Natasha Howard is big, because like you said, Miles, it's a shooting league and you need perimeter defense. You have Breonna Stewart still, and you still have a healthy and productive Sue Bird and Dan Hughes coming back. Until they go on a slide or until their metrics say otherwise, I still have the Storm fighting it out with the best in the league.
I'm not even going to push back on you too much there. I mean, they still have their core of Sue Bird, Breonna Stewart, Jordan Canada, Jewel Lloyd. Always got to give Ezzy a shout out too.
Yes.
That is a team that's also very well coached, not even just from Dan Hughes' standpoint, but all the way down that coaching staff. They're fantastic and just know what to do. And yeah, I trust that team. I just, again, losing Natasha Howard and Alicia Clark, that to me, I'm a little bit worried about that for their sake. But to go back to the Sky real fast before we move on to the Liberty's outlook, when I look at this team, obviously I think you have to point to their biggest holes on the interior. Having, you know, they struggled getting to the line, and obviously health was the biggest thing that derailed them the most last season, if we're being honest. They were one of the best teams in the WNBA offensively until Diamond and Azaire Stevens both fell to injuries. So, but I look at the two preseason games, and again, I know I'm just going off of the box score, and I hate when people are like, they only look at the box score and don't actually watch. But for a team that was last in the WNBA in free throw attempts per game with 14, or actually, no, 15 it was, they've already gotten to the line over 20 times in both preseason games. I know they're going against the Fever, who are like the worst defensive team last year. And they are just all over the place. But I think when you add Azaire Stevens and Diamond to Shields back into the into the lineup, it is also going to bring out the best of the defense. So I think when you bring that, I think if they're just an above average defensive team this year, that when you factor in the offense, it's just, I kind of see them being a top two team in the WNBA talent wise. I don't think that necessarily can play out standings wise, just because, like you guys had mentioned, Stu Du and Stephanie Dolson will be leaving for their national team commitment. So that could mess with the standings, but just in terms of talent, I actually think the Sky are right there with the Aces and Lynx and Storm. But watch out for the Mercury is all I'm going to say. Miles, we can't have you on here without talking about the Liberty. You're one of the most active people in reporting on this team, and you're at every press conference. I know that all the fans are really appreciative of what you do for the league and, you know, and your coverage with the Liberty. So I'm actually pretty excited to watch this team this year, which is not something I could say about the 2-20 team we saw last year, but how are you feeling going into this year as the team made a splash in the offseason?
Yeah, I think that where you have to start is they've got nowhere to go from up, right? They went 2-20 last season, and it was not just bad. It was really bad. They were 8 points behind everyone else in scoring, last in offense, last in 3-point percentage, despite being second in attempts, last in assists, first in turnovers, all that stuff that you don't want to hear. But then you also have to think, obviously, lots of teams had things that didn't break their way last year, but New York lost a whole bunch of players right before the season. They lost Asia Durr, who was the former number two pick, to COVID, and she still hasn't recovered. Rebecca Allen, who is the prototypical four for Walt Hopkins five out system. She's a wing that can play at the four and can three and D, can defend three to four positions. You had Maureen Johannes, who was supposed to be the top, you know, the backup point guard behind Sabrina, and she didn't come over. And then you had Sabrina herself, who got hurt 2.5 games into the season. So in her first game, she struggled a bit. She shot 4 of 17, and I think she had 12, 6 and 4. But then in her second game, she came out and hit 11 of 20 shots, 33 points, 6 threes, 7 rebounds, 7 assists. And then she got hurt in the third game. So like, she figured it out quickly. She's going to be fine. Last year, they ended up having Leja Clarendon and Jazz Jones running the point for most of the season after Sabrina got hurt. And Jazz Jones was very open with the fact that she hadn't played point guard since high school. When you contextualize that and you're just like, this team is last in assists, they're worst in turnover to assist ratio, where they were at 0.83 and the next worst team was 1.13 assists per turnover. So it was all really, really bad. But you have to think that like, that's all not going to break that way again. They lost a couple of pieces. They lost Kia Nurse, who, like you guys talked about Gabby Williams yesterday, and how she just did kind of whatever James Wade asked of her. That was who Kia Nurse was for the Liberty for the last few years. Especially it was kind of like passing the torch from Tina Charles to Kia Nurse to be that second scorer and then to suddenly be that first scorer. And last year she turned her ankle the first game of the season and battled. I think she missed one game. Then she battled throughout and like all of her percentages were down, but she was always driving, getting to the line. They lost Amanda Zowie B, who was the heart of the team and just such a solid rebounder on a team that I really worried about their rebounding. But you're bringing in Natasha Howard, and her accolades former defensive player of the year, former most improved, former all WNBA first team. She also has the largest point per game jump in WNBA history the year after winning most improved. So I would argue that she should have won it twice in a row. You bring in Banaja Laney, who went, talking about an improvement from 5.6 points a game to 17.2. Yeah. She jumped 12% in field goal percentage, 10% in 3-point percentage. She was in the 84th percentile on spot ups, which is going to be so much fun having Sabrina just dish her the ball for catch and shoots. The rookies that they brought in, both Michaela Anyanwede and Didi Richards, have positional flexibility. My favorite quote from Media Day yesterday, Didi Richards credited Kim Mulkey while she at Baylor by saying that she prepared me for this because freshman and sophomore year, I played the post. Junior year, I played the wing. Senior year, I played point guard. So she's ready to like throw her at any position, and she's just ready to go. So yeah, like I said earlier, the defense was ninth, which doesn't sound great until you contextualize all that they were missing and that they've added all these pieces now, and that it was a brand new system with seven rookies playing that all had to learn without a training camp, brand new coaching staff. So not even the vets couldn't even really give them a lot of help there. So now all the sophomores have been saying throughout camp, like, We're comfortable teaching the rookies because we get the system now. We're comfortable talking, just being in the league. And that was before they added a defensive player of the year in Howard, before they added all defense first team in Laney. Sammy Wickham was added, whose defense, according to Synergy, was top quarter of all qualifiers in three of her four seasons. So that is, and they talk about defense every day of practice. So like that is a huge, huge, huge part of their identity. And if you're forcing turnovers instead of committing turnovers, you're going to see those wins pile up really quickly, I think.
Well, one of the things that I'm excited about as well is that this is a team that's going to push the pace. And now they have Sabrina and honestly, Natasha Howard as well, as someone that's going to be able to be lethal in the fast break.
Good rim runner.
Yeah, honestly, I think that she's going to be someone that fits so perfectly with this team. And I agree with everything that you say, but I'm curious where you see them finishing in the standings. And it's actually, and I'm sure that you know this already, Miles, but it's actually kind of a win-win situation. If they make the playoffs, then okay, there's another exciting basketball team in New York. But if they miss out on the playoffs, I believe that they begin the season with like a 5-game lead.
4-game, yeah, plus four.
Yeah, so right. So it's a plus four-game lead here with, what was it? The lottery odds, right?
Yeah, the cumulative. So it's a 2-year lottery in the WNBA.
That's
so
right.
They have the inside track there where they're 4 games up on everybody else. So if they happen to miss, I did want to bring up that they were second in the league in pace last season. And that's despite not having their like starting point guard and their transcendent point guard. And now, like you said, adding Natasha Howard. And we talked about how Candace Parker was a break starter. You look at Natasha Howard, who could just grab the rebound. And if she sees the numbers on her mark on the other side, if the five on the other side is still running down court, she's just going to run right past her and get to the rim.
I want to ask very quickly, because it's only been a year in, and the way that things were going last year was, I think it was hard for me to focus on anything but the Sky and the team that they were playing on X day. So what have you seen is Walt Hopkins' philosophy? What is he trying to make the Liberty into?
Consistency is really one of the buzzwords. We've heard a lot about character in the offseason where these are all really high character players, but consistency when you have such a young team is what the most important thing is. So it comes down to effort. It comes down to turnovers and chasing down rebounds and boxing out. And Walt Hopkins is a player coach. He's someone that they could go to if they've got an issue on or off the court. And he's talked a lot about his own personal growth, coming back to just learning when he needed to be more authoritative and less friendly, because as the assistant coach, he could kind of take a step back and work with somebody off on the side if there is something particular that they're struggling with. But he's got a really, really strong staff around him. Shelly Patterson players rave about her all the time. Dustin Gray has helped with a lot of shooting, and they also just brought in Jackie Jamelis. And yes, the players really, really, especially the young players, love having someone who can relate to them, to their experience, because she was a pro a month ago, 2 months ago, and now she's kind of finding her footing. So that also makes her somewhat more approachable. So I think that the staff, he's talked about how there's buy-in from everybody, and this five out system, I think, is revolutionary, because we've seen it work on the men's side and we've seen it work on the women's side too. In 2019, Seattle broke the record for most 3-point attempts and most 3-point makes. And then the very next year, the Mystics broke the record. So in 2018, Seattle did it. Then 2019, the Mystics did it. And those two teams won the championship. Yeah. Now I was just going to say that those teams won the championship. So this five out, especially with someone like Sabrina, who can hit, who can like throw those skip passes, or you've got Howard who can drive all these like open cuts, the pick and roll. They've got options and they've got shooters everywhere. And that's his offensive approach. And then defensively, get stops and start running.
So a lot of positivity coming out of New York. Where do you see them ending the season? Just give me your, like, what's their ceiling right now? Where would you see them ending? If everything goes right, Sabrina has her coming out season. Where do you see the Liberty finishing up this, this season?
As a back end playoff team, I think is the appropriate ceiling, especially they've got the fever for the first two games of the season, which I was happy about when the schedule came out, because that seems like the team that you want to get off a good start against. But then Natasha Howard and Kia Stokes just finished overseas play today, so they're actually both going to be missing the first two games of the season. And if there's something about the fever that you need to worry about, it's Tierra McCowan down low and stopping her. And now it's up to Kylie Shook and Joyner Holmes, who are tough defenders, but they're not the same level as Natasha Howard or even Kia Stokes, who just has the experience to kind of hang in there and get vertical. So if those first couple of games don't break right, if you're falling into a hole against the fever, that's when that consistency talk comes back into play. But I think I see seventh is a really fair place to aim at. If you're getting Sabrina is the generational talent that the Liberty hope that she is and that the WNBA hopes that she is, then really the ceiling gets much higher. But my expectations aren't there yet, with still her being somewhat unfamiliar with the system and bringing in some big pieces like Laney and Howard for the first time.
I think that's not out of the realm of possibility. Just when you look at some of these other situations in the league, the Dallas Wings, I don't see them being a playoff team this year. The Fever are not going to make the playoffs. I'm sorry. I know they tried to stack up on some of these players that are like some of these veterans, but I just don't see how that's going to work with how, again, with Tierra McCowan and Lauren Cox. But the Atlanta Dream just lost their coach like a week or two ago, man, like a week before the start of the season. I mean, when you consider those three teams probably clogging up 10 through 12, anything can happen after that, honestly. So
yeah, the Sparks lost Candace and they lost Chelsea Gray. So I know that they retooled in an admirable way, but they could fall down. Then there are injuries elsewhere that you have to see how Connecticut bounces back, even though they've got Jonquil coming back. You have to see how the Mystics do without Alicia Clark. And there are going to be some teams that, like, not everyone's going to perform to their best capability, especially once depth is tested.
And you don't want to step on the gas pedal too much with Elena Deladon initially, because she's also coming off an injury, and you want her at the back end of the season more than you probably want to push her to, like, when everyone else is already down. So yeah, it's going to be interesting. Chris, before we move on from this, is there anything that you want to add?
No, I think you put it all into perspective. Seeing the players come back is going to be the real question. And I think the first 10 or 15 games would really show us, which I think it still could, But the fact that there's going to be interruptions in the season for the training camp and the Commissioner's Cup is going to kind of throw things into a different dimension. Oh, man. But I appreciate the elucidation of Walt Hopkins' philosophy, because that's what I was really looking for. Sorry to throw an SAT word in there.
Let me Google it real fast.
I was excited watching the Liberty in the wobble, because even as you knew they were going to take their lumps, they were still a kind of a fun team to watch. Jocelyn Willoughby being out is going to suck.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because she was a great player to watch. I think it was either you, Miles, or Owen Pence, who was always on Twitter, like, why isn't Jocelyn Willoughby playing at this point in time? And so having her out, she was a fun player to watch, especially for people like myself who like good, hard-nosed, defensive, bruising one-on-one basketball.
She's so strong.
Oh, man. It's like you take Sammy Wickham and Gabby Williams and then put them on the Marvel Avengers weight room plan for like a year.
Oh, my God. You know what, guys? We've talked so much about the Liberty. I feel like Skytown is going to be in our DMs about why we spent more time on the Liberty than we did on the Sky.
We'll convert a couple of people.
Yeah. Hey, no. But, guys, let's move on to one of my favorite segments, WNBA preseason award predictions, because it always goes just as planned and we're all right all the time about it. So let's just go down the line with Miles, then Chris, and then I'll give my take so that we aren't going too slow and stagnant through all this. So Miles, let's just get right into it. Who do you see winning the MVP this year?
So I want to qualify this, because there have only been two instances since 2008 where the MVP hasn't come from one of the top two teams in the league. And okay, both of those have Chicago connections. Elena Deladon in 2015 won the MVP for the Sky, who were the third best record. And in 2008, Candace Parker won the MVP for the 20-14 Sparks, who had just the fifth best record in the league. So it kind of pulls back to our first conversation about which were the top teams in the league, because I think it's going to have to come back to those. So if we're thinking that it comes down to the Sky and the Lynx and the Aces potentially, then you're looking at Asia Wilson, probably, right? Or unless Liz comes back and they run through her instead of the MVP, or Candace Parker, if this is Candace's team, because I think she's got the narrative coming home. Yep. But what I would note is what works against Asia Wilson is that Cynthia Cooper is the only player to ever win back-to-back MVPs, and she did it in the first 2 years of the league's existence. So right, you have to think about that voter bias as well. They don't love to go back-to-back. So I'm going to go Candace here. Ooh, steal that from you guys.
No, Chris, I'm going to hold off on my take. Chris, how about you? Who do you see winning MVP this year?
If the things break right for the Sky in terms of limited injuries, game plan and execution working flawlessly and everything gelling, and going to what Miles said and what we actually talked about, James, and we did our over-unders on like Candace Parker points per game, I think Diamond would be the one to break out in that whole system, because with the passing that they have, the attack, she's somebody who could play 25 minutes a night and get that same amount of points. If her shots are falling, she's getting to the line, like you noticed, James, in these two preseason games. And I really think that this is the year that she has to, not has to, or her star turn is going, her star is going to turn downward, but everybody's been trying to, wanting to, needing to see her as a superstar. And she hasn't been able to get there yet due to injuries, and just due to it not being time yet. So this, if everything breaks right for the Sky, this to me is Diamond's time, where she could really, really, really be something. If all things were right and it's not a Sky player, if it wasn't necessarily a given that a top two team in the league would get MVP, I would go out on a limb and say that Arike, even with picking up Charlie Collier and Awat Queer, I really think that Arike could just fill up the basket so much that she could be undeniable MVP. She is a player who is capable of getting that 53 points in a single game from the perimeter.
Would they have to make the playoffs? Because she led the league in scoring last year.
they would have to make the playoffs for sure. I don't think you can. I think the time has passed in any league where a team that does not make the playoffs, except maybe Major League Baseball, can have the MVP. Just because, you know, there's so many teams, there's so much, so many stats to go through. So you can get a guy like Mike Trout, who is easily the best player in the year in league and MVP, that doesn't make the playoffs. But Dallas would have to make the playoffs for Arike to get it.
I love Candace as an MVP candidate heading into this year. Not just like, I don't think she's going to have her best statistical season necessarily, but the narrative of her coming home and lifting this team to potentially a top two, top three seed, I think is just too delicious for the media to ignore. That is something that this is a narrative award that I think that there'll be people that'll be splitting hairs between Asia Wilson and Liz Cambage potentially getting in the mix there. And you know what? I mean, I do think those two actually could coexist where maybe Asia Wilson, and I'm just thinking about narratives right now. Asia Wilson was caught on camera shooting threes, hitting one in the preseason game after only taking like three or four attempts in her entire career up to this point. If she's adding something from beyond the arc and she has another season like she did last year, but also adding that dimension to her game, I could also see her going back to back. But again, we don't see that. Like you pointed out, that's not even just something that we see with just the MVP. I think that no coach has ever won Coach of the Year back-to-back years outside of Van Chancellor from like 1997 to 1999. So that's just, the voters just don't lean that way. And in terms of narratives, I love Candace heading into this season. And actually the thing that we should bring up too, because I think we wanted to touch on it, were these, the MVP odds. I'm just going to say, take advantage of these gambling sites not following up and looking at the MVP odds and like doing their homework on it, because I'm telling you, it is just bizarre what you'll see out there. So the two that makes, I'm just looking at DraftKings right now. Asia Wilson is the favorite at plus 300. That makes sense. Breonna Stewart plus 350. That makes all the sense in the world. This is where we get a little bit, this is where it gets interesting. Elena Deladon at plus 600, man, I don't know how that's going to work out, especially if she doesn't play this entire year. But then Brittany Griner at plus 700. Oh man. I mean, I think everyone has waited on Brittany Griner to put it all together and have that MVP season, but I mean, she's not even the best rebounder on her team. And that's not even that hot of a take. That seems really interesting. I mean, the Arike value at plus 1,300. That, I think that's a little bit intriguing, but Jonquel Jones at plus 1,300. I would be hitting that tonight after this podcast if I can, because that would be fascinating to see Connecticut become a top four seed and maybe have one of those outlier years where someone on a top four team can steal the MVP. So I think it'd be interesting. Her at plus 1,300 right now is much more intriguing than Elena Deladon at plus 600 or Brittany Griner at plus 700. Take advantage of these gambling websites because it continues to be blasphemous. I will move on from it, but do you guys have any takes based off of those DraftKings sports book odds right now?
Yeah, I love Jonquel Jones at plus 1,300. I think that Jonquel and Arike both at plus 1,300. I'm a little bit shy on Arike just because I worry about the team record. But just in terms of talent, yeah, some of these odds are laughable, but just laugh while you take advantage of them, I guess.
Yeah. No, I'm telling you, I'm not the best sports gambler. But when I gave my friends advice last year about who to bet on, I'm like, hey, just bet on the Storm every time when you see them playing a below 500 team, except when they faced the Fever, because apparently they couldn't pull that off last season. And I lost my friends a ton of money. Anyway, so let's move on to the next thing here. Miles, who do you see winning Coach of the Year?
Coach of the Year. I think it's going to come down to the offseason moves. I think it already could be that you look at Chael Reaver or James Wade because of those coach GM combos. But just to go somewhere else, I'm going to pick Sandy Brondello. The Phoenix Mercury have the talent to hang with anybody. In the last couple of seasons, they've really struggled with depth, but now they've added Kia Nurse, who's low-key one of my favorite moves of the offseason. Yeah. Her game will play so well there. She takes open shots, she attacks, she gets to the line, and she adds some perimeter defense. Like, take the pressure off Diana Taurasi, who now is going to have to travel coast to coast again instead of being in the bubble. Let Skylar cook, because if Kia's driving the ball or just staying on the weak side, Skylar could do her thing. She could space out for BG. And then if you put that all together, you're looking at a top four team, I think.
Wow, you stole it from me. But yeah, Chris, you go. Who do you think is the coach of the year this year?
The Dream, with the moves that they made, I think are gonna smack a lot of people in the face on any given night. And if Mike Peterson keeps the interim label for the whole season, he might get that interim head coach of the year award, that rare interim coach of the year. Because I'm a Cheyenne Parker stan. Everybody knows this, but I just think that they're going to be very, very good.
I'm with you, Miles, on the Sandy Brindello pick, because she hasn't won since 2014. I think when you look at James Wade, it's going to be hard for him to win it just because the expectations are the Sky can win a championship. They have Candace Parker, Diamond DeShields, Vander Quiggs, Kalia Copper, etc. It's going to be really hard for him to win it. I can also see Cheryl Reeve potentially getting it again, but man, at the same time, like, we haven't had back-to-back coach of the years since, again, 1997 with the Comets. So I don't really see that panning out either. And I think the most obvious choice would be Sandy Brindello. And also Diana Taurasi and Sky Diggs have spent months working out together and developing that chemistry we kind of saw at the end of last season. So it's going to be interesting. I think that Sandy Brindello would be my pick heading into this year, but you kind of laid out the case for it, Miles, so I won't go any further with it. Sixth woman of the year, Miles, who's your pick?
I know that D'Erica Hamby always has the inside track, but I wanted to have some fun with this one. I wanted to give this award to someone who makes the difference in either in a team making or missing the playoffs by keeping her team in games. And the two names that I came down to were Jordan Canada for the Seattle Storm. Ooh. She's dynamic, she's pesky, and she's always near the top of the steals leaderboard. And especially as Sue continues to take nights off, or I don't know if that messes with Canada's eligibility, but just rest more, she'll put up those numbers. But then instead of that, though, I'm going Ari McDonald in Atlanta. Ooh. I was watching the live stream, the Twitter bootleg live stream from B. Terrell at the preseason. And he said it best when he was live streaming that. He said, when Ari and Kennedy are on the court together, other teams are going to need an inhaler. And the energy that we saw in that tournament, if she can be, like Chris was saying, if Atlanta can be a potential playoff threat, then it's going to come off of that kind of energy. And I'm way past betting against Ari McDonald.
I like that a lot. And I don't think someone like Odyssey Sims, who's on a one-year deal, is going to stop her from being able to get a lot of minutes coming off of the bench. So I really like that. Chris, how about you? Sixth woman of the year. Who do you got?
I'm going to stand Damaris Dantas until people realize that she's that damn good for Minnesota, man. You have a three-point shooter at that capability at 6'2", 6'3", I think. And Minnesota, until the Sky need to beat Minnesota in order to be championship contenders. And Damaris Dantas is always a reason why they have trouble, never mind if he's a Collier or Sylvia Fowle. So especially if I, as high as I was on them earlier in the show, Damaris Dantas, sixth woman of the year.
I like that pick. So I'm actually just caught between two people because I love Jordan Canada. She is my favorite non-Sky player out there. I think that Jordan Canada, what she brings on the defensive end, I thought she actually could have been an all-star her sophomore year and didn't get the credit that she deserved there. Actually, she should be starting. She's a starting level WNBA point guard. But no, I mean, I'm caught between her and honestly, how about Raquana Williams coming out and stealing this award, taking it from her teammate, D'Erica Hamby? I mean, I think that is really intriguing when you look at what she's going to bring to the table from long range for a team that really is going to that could use a boost from beyond the arc after losing Kayla McBride. I wouldn't hate it. And I don't really know like if she's going to be starting. So maybe this is just a dumb thing to throw out there. But if she's going to be like, they're just going to, in the second unit, they're just going to rely on her to make some noise on the offensive end. I wouldn't hate that. I actually think that would be really interesting to see what she could do there. Oh, did we just lose? Did we just lose Chris?
Oh no, yeah, no, I made you the, host, but I do have to step.
Okay. Hey, that works out. We missed you in the last two sections of this, Chris, but hey man, thanks for joining us and we'll catch up soon.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Chris. Miles, thanks you for coming on. It's been a great discussion. I love it. We got to get you back on.
Absolutely. Thanks, man.
All right. We're Chrisless now. We're Chrisless. Miles, let's move forward with this. Who do you see defensive player of the year being this year?
I did want to just shout out your pick of the microwave for Quanah Williams. I like that. defensive player of the year. Okay, we can't get through this list without a little bit of homerism from me. Okay. Like we talked about before, New York spent the entire offseason retooling defensively, and that's been a priority throughout camp. That's all they're talking about. And even though Natasha Howard has not been there yet, she's not going to be walking to a mess. She's not going to walk into a mess belatedly. We talked about New York finishing ninth in defense. So if they can make that leap and jump into the top half, and then that was before Howard, before Laney, before Whitcomb, and they're adding Onyenwede, they're adding Dee Dee Richards, New York is going to be relentless. Joyner Holmes last week at a training camp session said, "We're going to execute defensively and you're going to feel us." I love that as the identity of the team. And Natasha Howard is going to be the centerpiece of that blitzing defense. And she's my pick.
I'm not going to lie. I kind of predicted that. That's fair. I was writing my notes. Yep. Natasha Howard for Miles' pick here. I don't hate that though. It all lines up and she's that type of, she's that kind of player. So I kind of like Jonquel Jones taking this one though. Like in 2019, when I just think about seeing her live and how much she just was a presence in the paint. But when you look, dive deep into the numbers too, like the team's defensive rating when she was on the court was 92.9, but it went all the way up to 101.9 when she was off the court. So I could just feel like we're going to see some highlights this year where she just meets someone at the rim and we're going to see that big play. And we're just going to see some Jonquel Jones highlights of her blocking people. And that's going to be enough for people to lose their minds and pick her for defensive player of the year.
That Connecticut team just gets me so bummed that this is the second straight year we're going to miss out on that big three, not having Jonquel last year, not having Alyssa Thomas this year. It's just kind of a huge what if, and I hope we get to see all of them with DeWanna Bonner play together.
Me too. I like what Jonquel Jones and DeWanna Bonner can do together more than I liked what they were able to do last year, which is, I know, kind of a hot take with Alyssa Thomas and DeWanna Bonner. Yeah, no, 100%. And I'm really high on Jonquel Jones and like what she brings to the table. And I just, yeah, it's, you know, but I'm not going to diss Alyssa Thomas too. She's incredible. Well, hopefully we'll be able to see those three together soon. But Miles, let's wrap this up. I just want to hear, this is something that's outside of the WNBA award season. I just want to know in this moment who you think the best player in the league is right now. Again, awards aside, just gut feeling right now, who do you have?
I think Chris brought up a really, really good point about just how talented Breanna Stewart is earlier. And it can't be overstated how difficult it is to come back from that Achilles injury. But I will say this league is so talented. And if an expansion draft was kicking off tomorrow and I had first pick, I'm going Asia Wilson. She's 24 years old and she's coming off an MVP season. She's been able to stay relatively healthy. She could take over a game on both sides of the floor. She's automatic from the elbow, which was my shot growing up. So I might be a little bit biased there. And if she was on my team, I'd let her shoot the three as much as she wanted. And then we could see really what her range looks like.
I still think we have to give this to Stewie. I just feel like we're about to see something so special from her this season. And I'm not going to push you back on the Asia Wilson pick. I think you really could go either way and you'd be happy to start your franchise with either of those players. But Miles, we've had you here for so long. It's 10 o'clock your time. But before we let you go, is there anything that you want to plug? I know we did at the top of this, but hey, remind the people. They just went through this great podcast with you, did such a great job. Can you tell us where we can find you?
Sure, sure. So I am at Miles Ehrlich on Twitter, and I spell my name kind of weird. So it's MYLESEHRLICH. And I write for Winsider, where last week I put out a fun preseason mailbag. So if you have any question, if you had any questions about what was going on ahead of the season, I answered some of those and had a really good time doing it. I'm also at Queen Ballers Club, where I've got a piece coming out tomorrow, I think, on Diana Taurasi, and Nets Republic, where I cover the Liberty beat. So if you need your timeline on Twitter spammed with Liberty press conference news, that's the spot to find me.
Seriously, man, thank you so much for your time. And I can't say it enough. You do so much for this league, and we really appreciate it. You know, we always know where to go if we want our Liberty news. So thank you so much for your time. And we'll have to have you back on soon when the Sky face Liberty.
Yeah, for sure. And I'll catch you on the Slack and we'll talk about all of it as it goes down.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for listening to another edition of the Skyhook Podcast. If you want to contact us, you can always do so by emailing our mailbag, which is theskyhookmailbag@gmail.com. One more time, that is theskyhookmailbag@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter. Our handle is @skyhookin, which is SKYHOOKIN. And also be looking out for us on Instagram. We're going to be doing some more breakdowns on there just to widen our range on social media. We want to give you as much content as possible. So be looking out for an announcement on that. And we would also appreciate it if you could subscribe to our podcast and leave us a review wherever you get your podcast. Right now we're available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. So really, thank you so much for joining us again. And until next time.